Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is the 2023 main event champion, Dylan White. From the fighting city of Toronto. I'm going to say Chicago. Not from Chicago. You're not making wet beefs. It's none of that stuff.
No, it is windy here, though.
Yeah. Okay. You know, it's windy. It's the windy city because of the politics, not because of the wind, actually. I think Boston is actually a windier city than Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
So, well, there you go. Yeah. Not just fantasy baseball in this podcast. It's meteorological history.
We're dropping gems on them right here. That's what we're doing. But all right, Dylan, thank you for joining me for another episode here. We just dropped a top 500 update February. It's a small update. Dylan made some tweaks on the list, sort of based on some of the signings and some of the happenings, etc., news that's happened over the last month or so since we initially put out the list. We'll probably do a bigger update, I would imagine, in March, when we get a little bit closer to the season and we also see some of these players in spring training know who gets the first elbow injury of the season, right? That's when baseball officially starts, is when one of your pitchers that you drafted in an early draft is probably going to miss the season with Tommy John surgery. So as soon as that happens, you know, we're going to start to adjust. So keep your eyes peeled, but we got a new one up on the site. And a bunch of other fantasy content we've been rolling out there since November. You know, big FYPD list. Of course, you can always supplement some of your prospect drafts, etc., with our top 900, all the different players in the top 30s. You can kind of combine that, turn it into something. And of course, we have Ben Badler's international dives. So lots and lots of deep names if you're reading those and kind of collecting the names together. But before we get into the update and discussing some of the moves that were made, Dylan, there's been some happenings out there in the baseball world. Players are reporting to camp, many in shape, so many in the best shape of their lives. one such case, as the video hit the internet this morning, or was it last night? It was Jackson Jobe video, added a sinker, the sinker that we saw hit 100 miles an hour, added a crazy curveball that was like 84, 85 miles an hour with drop. More different variations of pitches in this guy's arsenal. He's already got great stuff with his four seam and his slider and the cutter and changeup and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, he's turned into Yu Darvish. He wants to have like 6 different pitches he can throw that all rate at like 120 plus on a, you know, a stuff plus scale, though I guess we're not supposed to use stuff plus any longer. I think it's interesting. I'm interested to see how the Tigers sort of handle him this year, what the innings restrictions are. You know, I think there's a pretty good chance that he ends up in the rotation right out of camp. What do you think? I mean, I know obviously they signed Jack Flaherty, but still, you know, outside of Scooble, they were kind of hurting for some starters throughout the season, even in the playoffs, and they were kind of patchworking their pitching game plan together with a lot of bullpen usage. So what do you think about Jobe as a potential rotation mate, maybe slide into that number 3 or number 4 spot? Behind obviously Scooble and then Flaherty at the number 2 spot.
I mean, I could see it. I didn't think he would make it out of camp in the rotation. I just kind of feel they'd slow play it maybe. They didn't expect to make the playoffs last year, it seemed. And then, like, I mean, they traded Flaherty because they didn't think they were going to make the playoffs, and then they did. So I don't know if they think they're going to, and so then they will try to save Job for like the push or not. I mean, I just don't feel they're going to put him in the rotation right away. I don't mind their rotation right now. Like Scoble Flaherty, like you said, there's Reese Olson. They signed Alex Cobb, who I always like.
But he's also 37, turning 38 years old. So.
Yes, definitely true. Definitely true.
On that one, he almost feels like the what was Kyle Tucker's brother's name? Preston Tucker.
Preston Tucker.
It feels like the Preston Tucker Acuna situation, where like they had Preston Tucker play for the Braves in like right field or whatever for like a month, and then it was finally like, all right, it's Acuna time. It kind of feels like that with Cobb. The other one is Casey Mize. End of that rotation, you're not exactly talking about Iron Men there, guys that eat innings, lots of injury history. You know, Mize obviously as well is probably going to be on somewhat of an innings limit, I would imagine. And they could even go six man, and they could use Job and, you know, almost like in piggyback starts with some of those guys too, if they want to limit the innings. So could be interesting what they do. I just think, you know, he's on the 40 man roster. He's had major league time. You can get that PPI pick, you know, it's the AL. It's way more wide open than the NL is with Sasaki and some of the other names that will be in the NL this year, at least I imagine to be. So I don't know. I think there could be some benefit to it. It really just depends on where he's at, what his game plan is, what he looks like throughout spring training. He's definitely a guy that could push his way, you know, into the rotation. Though I would say the safe bet maybe is that he joins in May or something like that. But I don't know. I always think that the PPI with prospects of this caliber loom large, because you don't get many of these bites at the apple, especially if, you know, you're a team on the upswing like the Tigers, but also does have some restrictions in spending versus, you know, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Phillies, the Cubs, those sort of teams that can go out and or the Rangers, obviously they can go out and Braves go out and spend a fortune. Right. So I just wonder if, you know, that bonus pool money really can change how you attack the draft just by adding a few million dollars on top, whether that's overslotting someone in the first round and kind of pulling somebody down 10 picks or something like that. We saw that with the Diamondbacks and Corbin Carroll, or even spreading that money around and, you know, popping a player in the 11th round. Astros did that a few years ago with, you know, Ryan Clifford. We've seen it other times as well. So it's just, that is such a major chess piece when you're trying to build out organizational depth and value and acquire assets that are really good trade assets. I kind of wonder if they're going to waste that or not, but we'll see. You know, Job certainly adding a sinker and a curveball makes me excited. That being said, let's move on to the next one. Bad news for Ben Joyce owners out there. Guys, Kenley Jansen has joined the Angels. The timeless wonder. This guy's going to be closing games until he's 45. It's what it feels like. What do you say, Dylan? Do you like Kenley Jansen going to a pretty good pitching environment with the Angels?
Yeah. I mean, I have Ben Joyce in a bunch of spots, so I'm not happy about that. But yeah, I mean, like you said, timeless wonder indeed. He's like fifth or sixth all time in saves or something. Every year, I'm always out on Kenley Jansen, and he always ends up producing value in redraft leagues. So I expect him to be just another Kenley Jansen year, 20, 25 saves, pretty good ERA, probably a wobbly couple weeks at one point where people get scared, but then he just rights the ship and closes the rest of the year. But yeah, bad news for Ben Joyce, but I guess you can't really have expected Ben Joyce to be like the closer from the jump all the way through the season. It's just injury prone, wild, etc. But like, I liked getting him in the like 13th round or whatever. He seemed like one of the safer, sure things at the time. But now in hindsight, it's like, what was I thinking?
And Jensen is fourth in saves all time. And I think he's 31 saves behind Lee Smith for third. You know, once you get up to 1-2, you got Mariano at 652 and you got Trevor Hoffman at 601. But, you know, when you look at the number of innings that he's pitched versus Lee Smith, I mean, it's pretty significant, honestly. So that's kind of interesting. We'll see where that goes. I think Jensen at 37 years old, maybe has a couple of decent years left. He wasn't bad last year. Could just bounce around at different teams at this point in his career. And, you know, kind of vulture some saves, but we'll see how long that lasts. The wheels can't fall off at any point in time. Speaking of the wheels falling off, not great news out of Reds camp today for Rhett Lauder managers. Rhett Lauder has a sore pitching elbow. Not great news. I didn't think he was going to break camp necessarily. They brought in some pitchers. There's actually more depth there than you would imagine with the Reds. But I thought would be a pretty decent part of that rotation in the picture. You always need 7 or 8 arms to really get through a season, frankly. And the Reds seemed to have it. It seemed like they were building some good organizational depth, especially at the major league level and then sort of AAA, having guys that could supplement as injuries come in. It's not going to kill the Reds season, but this is definitely a blow. You know, if you picked up Lauder, I think probably in redraft, I would imagine, was maybe one of the higher ADP rookie pitchers. So yeah. We know dynasty is dynasty. Put on your NFBC hat for a second here. You're the expert of experts, or one of them. Canada's best export, NFBC main event winners. Take that. Can't tax you either on that. But Dylan, what are your thoughts on the Rhett Lauder situation, and where was he going, like ADP-wise at NFBC? Do you have any shares at this point? Sort of what's your outlook?
I don't have any shares. I was kind of worried about the park in general. He doesn't really have blowaway stuff too, so it's kind of dicey, I felt. He went in the 29th in this draft that I've been watching closely. So that's pretty late. That's after the first 23, obviously. So it's like a bench pick. I would imagine he's going to slip further. I think he's going to slip into the 40s. I think people still take a shot. Like, they didn't announce he's shut down or it's IL or anything like more menacing than that or ominous than that. But I think, it's elbow news with a pitcher. It's always scary. So he was already kind of a dart throw, I think, in redraft. So I just think it's going to be even more. He's just going to fall into the 40s.
Yeah, I think that's that seems reasonable. Probably going to be the case. We got news that everybody had anticipated was going to happen. It was just a matter of what point in the year were we going to hear that Clayton Kershaw was re-signing with the Dodgers. I don't know what the plan is. I don't know how healthy he is at this point in camp, if they expect him to be part of the rotation or in the mix early in the season. I kind of get this feeling with Kershaw that it's almost like a Roger Clemens thing with the Astros. If you remember, like, his last few seasons, he'd come back and, pitch for the Astros and from June or July on, and then would sort of be like that second half trade acquisition that they could acquire on a prorated contract. I don't know what the situation is with Kershaw. Maybe you know more. I hadn't read much on it other than just sort of seeing the news drop. But I would imagine, if you're looking at rostering Kershaw, you probably can't anticipate more than 110 innings this year. That would, you get 120 to 130 out of Kershaw. You got lucky, in my opinion. But where are you at with Kershaw at this point?
I like Kershaw a lot. Obviously, the skills have deteriorated. He averaged lower than 90 miles an hour on his fastball last year, but the projections still kind of like him. He's still his ERA is below 4 on all the projection systems on FanGraphs. They have him for 90 innings, which it's not horrible. I don't think it's too optimistic. I don't think it's too pessimistic. I could see maybe 90 innings over the whole season. I don't know if he's going to be in from the beginning or if they're going to slow play him. They're talking 6-man rotation already. They got a lot of arms there that they can kind of mix and match in the Dodger way of the Phantom ILs, etc. But I do like him for this year. He's not really a dynasty asset unless you need him. If you're competing this year, that's when you can trade for him. And because it's kind of like the writing's on the wall that he's probably going to retire after this year, someone who has Kershaw and who is not competing is going to want to get out from underneath that. So you can probably get him for pretty cheap. So he is someone that I have on one of my dynasty teams and it is competing and I don't want to drop him. So I do expect to keep him. It's a 20 team league. So I like him for this year, but obviously nothing further out.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's year to year with that one. It's kind of a plug and play depth arm, and you'll probably be moving them back and forth between your IL and your bench, your active roster, whatever it might be, depending upon what your league's like. All right, well, let's move on to the last bit of news that we have here. Four-man death battle for the closer role in Boston. Let's hope it's not closer by committee. That's always the dreaded term for, I think, fans and fantasy players alike. No one likes a closer by committee situation. But Justin Slayton in the mix, Liam Hendricks in the mix, Aroldis Chapman in the mix, and the dark horse here, Garrett Whitlock. Personally, I think I'd probably rank it Slayton, Whitlock, Aroldis, and then Hendricks. I just don't know what we're going to get with Liam Hendricks at this point, though it's a great story, and I'm cheering for him. Dylan, how would you rate those guys out and just sort of levels of excitement here with some of these different names?
I mean, I like them all. I like Liam Hendricks. I'm rooting for him to come back. I am just dreading the spring training announcement that, you know, he's got elbow soreness again, or he's throwing 91 or something. Aroldis, much maligned, appropriately much maligned Aroldis, did actually pitch pretty well last year, and I think the year before too. He could be effective in that pen, and obviously he has the trademarked closer experience. Slayton, I really like his stuff. I do like him. I think he's going to be the closer at some point in his career. But I don't know if they're going to trust, you know, I think the Red Sox want to be competing. I think they have designs on competing and making the wild card. I can't imagine they're not. So I just can't imagine them trusting him unless he just comes out gangbusters. And that leaves Whitlock. And Whitlock, I liked. I've always liked him. I liked him, even though he was a kind of a swingman always, like half starter, half reliever. He was just always effective. His ERAs were often good, except in 2023 when it was, you know, 5.15. And I think I had him on a lot of teams that year too. But despite that, I still like him. He had Tommy John. Is that right? He missed most of the season last year.
Yes.
So, yeah, so... He's supposedly on track. He's in spring training now. He may not like open the season.
He returned, I think, the end of the year in Worcester. I saw him pitch.
Oh, he did. Oh, okay. Okay. That's good. Sure. So, I mean, it looks like it may be a full year from him of, you know, 60 innings or so as a reliever. And, you know, he's always had good stuff. So I do like Whitlock there. So, I mean, I think if you have any of those four, I mean, it's exciting that you can hear that they're in the mix for closer, but you're also worried that they're not going to be the one that comes out on top.
Yeah. Yep. I totally agree with you right there. Yeah. And I did see Hendricks in AAA last year. Missed him in AA actually, but did see him in AAA late in the year when I was covering a couple different series. He made four total appearances for AAA and a pair of appearances with AA Portland. So kind of interesting. He did pitch last year. He actually didn't allow a run across five innings, only struck out three, walked two. So, you know, I'm sure the FIP is 3.53. So still decent, but kind of interesting there. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how the Red Sox closer battle sort of shakes itself out. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast, talking about some of the adjustments in the top 500, let's take a quick break.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to five times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
All right, and we are back. We are talking top 500 dynasty ranking updates here. Dylan kind of laid out in an article some of the moves and reasons for the moves. I'd say that the biggest movement here amongst any sort of positional group seems to be relievers. There's been quite a few that have signed. The Dodgers kind of stockpiling a bunch of potential closers certainly affected value of guys that were already on the list that were on the Dodgers, as well as some of the players that have signed with the Dodgers. So why don't you talk me through that a little bit? Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates signed. That impacts Evan Phillips. It impacts Michael Kopech. How do you see everything sort of shaking out with the Dodgers? Is Scott sort of the guy in the leader in the clubhouse, kind of in the bird dog seat, whatever you want to say?
Yeah, it sounded like it was going to be Yates after he signed. And then Dave Roberts had some comments yesterday or the day before that Scott is going to be the primary closer at the beginning of the season. So yeah, when we made the ranks first, it was like Phillips and Kopech were kind of the guys. Blake Treinen was in there too, who had a big postseason. And then after the Scott and Yates signing, they obviously had to drop off. So Evan Phillips, who was announced today, has, I think, elbow soreness, definitely arm soreness, which he had in the playoffs. So he had PRP injections in the playoffs, apparently. So he's right off the 500 now. He was already in the back end, so it's not too precipitous a drop. Kopech also was probably not going to be ready for opening day, so that was easy to drop him. And so, yeah, Scott and Yates, we kind of moved up. And I think... You know, I think I like Scott out of that crew more. Like Kirby Yates doesn't have the greatest stuff. He had a really great season last year. But he doesn't really have the lights out stuff that Tanner Scott has. So I expect Scott to have the better season, probably more saves and better ratios.
Yeah, I think that is totally reasonable. But, you know, we could probably see less saves from Scott than I think his managers probably are hoping for. And, you know, there's probably 15 or 16 plus vulture saves kicking around among that group, I feel, especially with the amount of games the Dodgers are going to win. So maybe they have enough W's to feed all those different mouths and have a bunch of valuable relievers. We've certainly seen that before. That wouldn't be totally unusual. A little bit more straightforward, but not completely clear when we're talking about the Cubs situation. Ryan Pressly waives his no trade clause. He's traded from the Astros to the Cubs. This impacts Porter Hodge some. You mentioned the quality of the skills there. I like Hodge a lot as well. Was excited to roster him. This is one of the reasons that I try to play in as many saves hold leagues as possible, because I can still go after the best skill relievers without caring about roles as much. Talk to me a little bit about how you see that shaking out and sort of what the split will be in terms of saves, because Pressly hasn't always been a closer. He's kind of been, you know, that reliever that gets used in high leverage spots, etc. Situationally. I don't think the door is closed on Hodge locking down that job, but you tell me.
I mean, I think it's pretty plausible that Hodge ends up with most saves for the Cubs this year. I think Pressly, as part of signing and as part of waiving the no trade clause, was kind of given assurances he will be a closer, one of the closers, primary closer out of the gate, something like that. And that was part of, you know, the appeal of, you know, approving the move. So I think he will be in there. They probably will mix and match. Pressly is a bit older, so, you know, he probably can't do too many back-to-backs. He can't do 3 out of 4, that type of thing. So Hodge will get a bunch of saves. And I can see Pressly going on the IL too. So I still like Hodge. As a result, I didn't move him down because I think he's obviously a better dynasty asset than Ryan Pressly. Ryan Pressly maybe this season may get more saves possibly, but I think in the long run, it's clearly Hodge. I kind of put Pressly in at the back of the 500. It's a guy that, you know, if you need saves, you're competing, you're willing to pay for a rental that, you know, is not going to probably be on your part of your team for the next couple of years. You know, you trade for these like Ryan Pressly's or Kenley Jansen that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and I think, you know, another thing to keep in mind that might lean in the favor of Pressly is the fact that he's getting paid $14 million this year, number one. Mm-hmm. This is the last year of the contract. So he is a free agent after 2025. Sure. Porter Hodge is pre-arb. They could try to play some of those games to keep the arb number lower. Arbitration is a very archaic process. They don't really factor in holds or any of those sort of things. leverage innings, none of that stuff. It's very heavily based on saves. So sort of limiting the amount of saves opportunities he gets this early in his career could pay off later on in terms of how much they have to pay out. Not that the Cubs are particularly cheap, but teams are, you know, it's a business. They're cognizant of this sort of thing. And Presley is a sunk cost at $14 million that they also traded away some assets for. So I think you just have to keep all of that sort of in mind. And I think it's one of the reasons that you probably do see, you know, Presley walk away with a lion's share of saves this season. Moving on to some other reliever news. Your favorite team, Dylan, signed Jeff Hoffman to a multi-year deal. I would assume he is the presumptive closer that we heard some talk of him starting.
Yeah, I think he's the closer. Assuming that the medicals, which the Jays do not seem to have a problem with, are fine and he pitches all season, I think he's going to be the main closer. They also signed Yimmy, but I think it's going to be Jeff Hoffman. It was a multi-year deal, lots of money, former Jay coming back home. So yeah, he's the guy for me. So we moved him up about like 30 or 40 slots.
Which I think makes a lot of sense. I think he was somebody that I just felt like the talk around him and his ability to sort of jump into a big role was always going to be a player we were probably going to have to adjust and maybe move up a little bit. Because it did seem like teams were very interested in the skills. And, you know, he had a great year last year. I had him as sort of a late round flyer that I thought might be able to get some saves with the Phillies, just the murkiness of their closer situation at one point last year. Like, maybe 39th round or something like that in an NFBC. And, you know, was a pretty good plug and play. Like when we had some pitching injuries, Jared Jones went down, some other guys, we were able to get some quality innings, some saves even out of them. Good ratios, good Ks. The skills are definitely there. I think, you know, that was a welcome addition because the Blue Jays bullpen last year was probably, among other things, but that was their primary Achilles heel. They really did struggle. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, keeping runs off the board and protecting leagues throughout the season. So that's good to hear. It's going to help out my Bowden Francis shares as well. Moving on now to the Royals. They added Carlos Estevez, multi-year deal. He's a presumptive closer. Sad trombone for my Lucas Urseg. I loved Urseg. I love when they grabbed him last year and down the stretch, you know, close some games for him, which was fun. How do you see this shaking out?
I mean, I think it's just like the Presley-Hodge thing. Estevez is signed, lots of money, so he is probably the closer. So it's not great for Lucas Urseg in this scenario. But Lucas Urseg's got the skills. Lucas Urseg will probably be a closer at some point. Maybe next year, maybe even early this year, if Estevez stumbles a bit. The thing about the Urseg too is they were talking originally about maybe trying him out as a starter. I think they've poo-pooed that already. But you know, clearly the dynasty asset to have is Urseg. In redraft, it's probably Estevez. But you know, I would still take Urseg because he is the handcuff and he's got the skills. So no matter what, he'll be giving you some value on weeks where you don't have like the starting pitchers that you want. For that week, you plug him in and you get some good ratios.
And Gwyneth Paltrow's favorite reliever in the game, Chris Martin of Coldplay fame, signed with the Rangers. You noted the good ratios and the fact he's probably not going to be a closer. He didn't make the top 500, but you mentioned him. So sort of what's your outlook for Martin? Do you like him in more like a saves hold environment?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine the Rangers are going to just stick with what they have. They lost Leclerc, like Kirby Yates, David Robertson, all these guys are gone. And like, is it Chris Martin? I don't know. So I think if you're drafting an NFBC now, for example, I think he's the guy you take. There were some articles about John Gray kind of possibly being thought of as the closer, but they want to stretch him out for some innings as a starter because he's valuable there. So I'm not comfortable taking Chris Martin. I think if you're desperate, maybe you trade for him, but he didn't make the 500, but he's kind of in like the 550s. So if a bunch of people get injured and drop off, he may creep in. But I did mention in the article that like, just because he's not there, like you can trade someone in the 400s for him if you need if you need saves. Like, it depends on need. When you're back down at that level, 400s, 500s, it's all kind of the same. It's all based on your need, based on your risk profile, based on your window of competition. So he may not be on the 500, but he's looming.
Some unfortunate news if you are a Luke Weaver stan like I am. Loved watching him in the playoffs last year and down the stretch. I thought it was one of the better sort of renaissances we've seen from a former starting pitching prospect, you know, who kind of stumbled for a little bit, recapturing something, finding something, and being one of the better relievers in the second half of last season. They trade for Devin Williams. He's obviously the closer. You move down Luke Weaver a little bit. Do you still like him in saves hold leagues? How much does it impact his value for you? Because I think he's still probably clearly the high leverage guy. I could say eighth inning setup guy, wherever you want to be. I don't think the role is really that any longer in baseball. I think it's more, when do we need to use this guy and not touch the guy that we just kind of give the ninth to, which I think will be Devin Williams. Talk to me about Luke Weaver and, you know, what sort of leagues are you rostering him in, and, you know, how off of him are you in, like, we'll say, like, a, you know, draft champions NFBC format or something?
Yeah, I think when we issued the first rankings, Devin Williams had signed, but it wasn't yet announced if he was going to be the closer. And I was still kind of hedging that maybe he wouldn't. It wouldn't necessarily be slam dunk Devin Williams. It might be a two-headed monster just because Weaver was so good. It was in the World Series too. Like, they really relied on him in the biggest stage, and he came through. But then I guess it was announced clearly that Devin Williams is the guy. So I think you have to lower him. But like you said, just the ratios are incredible. High leverage situation. If Devin Williams stumbles, not just go on the IL, but if he just stumbles, it could easily just become Luke Weaver. I think he still should be taken in like the 20th round or so in NFBCs. Like, he's going to have the ratios. He's going to be the guy to plug in. And if Devin Williams is on the IL, if he stumbles, there could be a month or two where you're putting in Luke Weaver and you have a top closer on your team to plug in every week. So he's still definitely valuable. Clearly he's more valuable in saves holds where you don't have to hope for an injury or a stumble from Devin Williams. Or back-to-back. But yeah, he's still very valuable. Really like him a lot.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Let's move on to a different position. That was all the reliever notes, and I feel like there was a ton of them. Let's talk about some of the injury impacts. We mentioned Lauder. That's a developing situation. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. We have more information that we can be more decisive with. Braxton Garrett, a pitcher who seems like he's always dealing with something. In January, it was announced that Garrett would miss the entire 2025 season due to Tommy John surgery. The numbers have been pretty good. He'll still be only 28 when he comes back in 2026. Forget about him for redraft. Do you view him as sort of a decent buy low right now in dynasty leagues if you have the ability to sort of stash this guy on your bench and then in your IL? Do you think he could come back strong in 2026 and really be, you know, a great sort of buy low for you a year later?
I think so. On the super I played with Jordan last year, like, we grabbed him when he was coming back because just he had an ERA of 3.58 in 2022, an ERA of 3.66 in 2023. Like, this guy has been good in his early 20s. And his FIP and his XFIP were all in there too. So it was like the projections, obviously we'd love him because he's got a good strikeout walk ratio. But just, he wasn't quite right. And clearly he had Tommy John, so he wasn't right. So yeah, I think I would buy low. If he comes back, he's still only 28, still kind of right in his prime, pretty good park, etc. So when this dynasty ranking, when we made the first rankings, it was with the fact that he wasn't quite right. That was held in mind. So he had some risk, and so we didn't go too high on him. And so, you know, when it was announced he had the Tommy John, we didn't have to drop him too much because we kind of already baked that in. So I do like him as a buy low. I always like Braxton Garrett. And yeah, I think I would trade for him.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you're kind of in like that middle tier, like, you know, you're building toward next year, you got a young team. This is the kind of pitcher that's not bad to buy, especially if you have, you know, an older player. You know, maybe you got Clayton Kershaw on your roster and somebody's holding this guy and you're like, hey, here's 90 innings. Have you seen Have you seen the projections on Kershaw? Come on, right? Listen to this podcast. It's got all the answers. It's the skeleton key to your dynasty trades. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Some unfortunate news. A player we were very high on this offseason. We knew he was dealing with something. Sounds like Zach Nato is going to miss a month, maybe 5-6 weeks to open the season. He's going to miss some time. Certainly that's a concern. We moved him down a little bit, but I don't think it impacts his value long-term. It's more in the immediate. Are you kind of off him now in redraft?
Yeah, he'd been slipping in redraft. So much so that I was targeting him just because I thought maybe he'd miss a couple weeks. Like just maybe he wouldn't start the season, but now maybe it's a bit longer. Maybe it's worse than they're saying. I mean, they signed Tim Anderson, so they're moving on from Neto. But no, I mean, long-term value is still great. He's 23 years old last year. He put a 3.5 WAR season up, 23 home runs, 30 stolen bases. So at age 23, if he's doing that, 3.5 WAR season. So his defense is good at a premier position. Like this guy is a very strong asset in real baseball. He's got the speed and power in fantasy baseball. So long-term, he's still great. So maybe not this year. Maybe I'd kind of pump the brakes a bit because you may maybe only get five months or worse. But I don't think you can like guarantee that you're going to have more than 5 months. So you gotta drop them a bit in redraft. But I'd still dynasty. I'm kind of all guns blazing.
Let's talk about another couple of players here. Some new additions. Haesung Kim of the Dodgers. You know, you note this, but it's a really unusual situation with him where it's like I. He's going to have a full-time role, more than likely, maybe. We don't know, right? Like, we have no idea. I still think there's probably a minimum of, like, 350 plate appearances there. I don't think that's outrageous. But it's, you know, if he gets 600, there's a pretty big difference in terms of what the value is going to be, of course, right? Yeah. So he's got a wide range of 2025 outcomes. Talk to me a little bit about that. We added him sort of at the back end of the list.
Yeah, I like the skills. He's young. He's good at defense. So, like, he's got the tools to be a good player. But it's like, is this going to be like a Gavin Lux, Michael Bush, maybe even Dalton Rushing now situation with the Dodgers, where the skills are there on a per plate appearance basis? They're good, but they just don't give him the runway to run with it. And they just signed Enrique Hernandez just recently. They just announced it, I think, officially today. So like that kind of muddies the waters even further. So I think maybe in redraft, it's a risky to, you know, rely on him as your MI or something. But in dynasty, I still like the skills. I think, you know, if he's a utility player, you'll get some multi-eligibility, hopefully. Good dose of speed. He's not going to hurt you in the batting average or OBP. So he's a nice little bench player to fill in if there's injuries. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting because I wanted to see what he'd do this year in a full-time role. And, you know, maybe it's not going to happen. And I think you got to kind of bank in that it may not in 2025.
And a player that we kind of just inadvertently forgot about a little bit. The Nationals, they had traded for Nathaniel Lowe. Where is he moving at the list, Dylan, for you? I'm a little bit less into Lowe, maybe, than some other first baseman around where he's ranked, but you put him at, I think, 200. So you like Lowe a bit. And why?
Yeah, he's kind of an accumulator. He's gotten, let's look here. Yeah, so last year he had 565 plate appearances, which was his lowest total for the last 4 years. He had 724 the year before, 645 and 642 in the other two previous years. So he's always kind of been a sneaky value. He's a guy I've been taking as kind of a late first baseman in the last couple of years, just because of that. He slips and I'm like, well, I guess I'll take him here. The Bat X does not like the new situation for him. They give him 12 home runs in the season, which is pretty stark drop from the other projection systems, like Steamer has him 18, Zips has him 18, Oopsie has him 18, which is kind of where I have him. He had 16 home runs, 17 home runs, and 27 in the big year of 2022, and then 18 before. So he's kind of like a 20 homer guy, doesn't hurt you in average. His OBP has been 360 for four straight seasons, basically. So he gets on base. Like I said, he's an accumulator with the plate appearances. So he gets the runs, he gets the RBIs. So I think he's a solid player, and he's still in his 20s, not quite 30. He's going to be the first baseman for the Nats for a long time. Well, not a long time, but like without real competition. So I just think he's a solid player who's going to put up value for you.
100%. Last thing we kind of talk on here. There were some other signings, some older players, some players that were probably properly ranked where the ranking didn't really change our valuation. And a few of them, Verlander, Scherzer, they're older statesmen at this point. You know, what you get from them at this point, for me at least, is sort of gravy, right? If you got a good season from either of them, you got to be, you know, thanking your lucky stars, go buy a lottery ticket. Either of those guys gives you 150 quality innings, you got pretty lucky. I think we all anticipated that Sasaki would probably sign with the Dodgers. Doesn't change his evaluation at all. I think when we ranked him, we kind of ranked him with the thought that it's a better than 50% chance he's going to land up with the Dodgers. Jack Flaherty, we saw him with the Tigers last year. Pete Alonso stays put with the Mets. We've seen Pete Alonso with the Mets his entire career. None of these players, you know, needed to have any sort of value adjustments. I don't know if you have anything to sort of say on that. Kind of expected.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like we were baking in, okay, what if he signs with a good team? What if he signs with a bad team? What if he signs with the team that we've known? And so like we kind of split the difference, and it kind of each of these signings were kind of in that middle. It's kind of like Tanner Scott. Like we thought maybe he'll sign as a closer for a team, but maybe he won't. Maybe he'll be on the Yankees or something and not be a closer. So we kind of split the difference. He's now with the Dodgers, which is good because it's a great team, but he's not necessarily the closer, but he's kind of the primary closer. So he's kind of in the spot where we had him. So that's why there weren't that many moves in this dynasty update. I think, like you said, in the next one, when like spring training battles are happening and more injuries are being announced, maybe there's some trades, maybe Bregman finally signs, then, there may be a lot more movement than we saw this month.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. The Bregman ordeal is really, really interesting. We've both heard sort of a variety of places you could end up. I had heard that there was a standing 6-year offer from the Astros. I had heard that there was a 6-year offer with a first year opt out from the Blue Jays. It was a mystery team, but they also in the same report had mentioned that the Tigers, Red Sox, and Cubs were still in it. So it's probably not one of those teams. I would imagine that it's the Blue Jays. Not a bad move. Of all the places that he could potentially end up, what's the best landing spot for you with Bregman as we wrap this up?
I would like him on the Jays. That would hurt Ernie Clement. Soft spot.
Oh, no.
Hurt Ernie Clement. I don't. What is the best spot? I mean, it probably the Astros. We know what we get. He loves the Crawford boxes. He's a good fit there. Tigers. I mean, good for him to get a long-term deal. Cubs. I don't want Matt Shaw to lose playing time. I have big plans for Matt Shaw this year. I know you were talking about if he does sign there, then maybe there'll be some other transactions the Cubs do to make room in that infield. So I don't know. I think maybe the best spot is the Astros, as kind of boring as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it's probably the best potential landing spot, because it's sort of what we just talked about with Flaherty, and particularly with Pete Alonso. We're very familiar with what he's going to look like in that ballpark, you know, how a spray chart's going to work. And he is tailor-made for sort of a short left field porch. As a guy that is a dead pull hitter in terms of his power and all that sort of thing. I don't think the Cubs would be a bad landing spot. I think ultimately Shaw might end up at second base based on some of the comments. It's probably Nico Hoerner who's then out the door, who still has some trade value and could return some players for the Cubs. They could package Hoerner with like Alcantara and Casey and probably bring in a pretty good player. It's just who's going to be available that you want to move all that for. So they do have some assets. If they sign Bregman, there's a way that Shaw and Bregman together are both in that infield. And that would certainly fortify that Cubs lineup, especially with Tucker and, you know, some of these other players. That would be a much more exciting offensive environment and lineup kind of around Shaw. You have a bunch of run producers, but he might hit a little bit lower in the lineup if Bregman signed there. So, yeah, I don't think the Blue Jays would be bad. I don't think the Cubs would be bad. The Red Sox would be fine. I think a lot of those home runs would probably turn into doubles. But I think ultimately, yeah, the Astros is probably the best landing spot for Mr. Bregman. You know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. It's one of those sort of situations, especially considering that ballpark and that left field wall, you know, kind of plays perfectly into his swing. And when he's on, the thing I'm worried about with Bregman right now is he's historically a slow starter. If he doesn't have a full camp, and we're pretty close or right at that point that if he's inside in the next couple of days, he's not going to have a full camp. That worries me a little bit. Maybe it shouldn't. That's the last thing I'll sort of kick back your way before we wrap this up. But what are your thoughts on that? Just him being a slow starter and maybe getting a late start in spring training.
No, I think it's very valid. I think we saw that with Snell last year. He started off slow because he didn't sign till later. And I think Jordan Montgomery, same idea. Snell got back on track. Montgomery didn't. So I think it's very valid. I think it's very possible. Maybe it's different for a hitter. Maybe, I don't know, maybe timing is different than like mechanics for pitching or something. I don't know. I'm just talking right now. I have no idea.
Yeah. You just got to see.
Yeah. I think it's very possible, but I mean, he just seems to be like a clean mechanics, and he's like a professional, like he's doing his work in the cage, I'm sure, staying on top of his conditioning and all that. So it may be not too much. I think it's definitely a possibility, but I mean, I expect him to sign in the next couple of weeks. I don't think this is going to drag on too long.
Yeah, I would imagine it's going to happen soon. Like, I'm just hoping it's not tonight so we can release this podcast. Alex, don't sign until like 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. That way, this at least stays evergreen for a little bit. But we went through a lot of updates here, 45 minutes, but we kind of crushed it. We went through them quick. We covered a lot of players, a lot of movement on the list, some of the news and notes at the top of the show. This has been another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. For Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.